again, to recap my background, it works primarily in maternal and child health, health equity, primary care, some work in tribal health, some work in opioid dependency, and because of that, I have no time to do anything else, and therefore no relationships to disclose regarding this presentation. So, ask though, the Association for State and Territorial Health Officials is the membership organization for the 59 senior health leaders throughout our country, in the states and in the territories and in the District of Columbia. That means that we don't have an interest in getting more members. It's limited to that number, and what the state health official means by these different jurisdictions depends. The saying goes, if you've seen one, you've seen one. Well, this certainly applies to state health infrastructure. It does also mean that we do provide support to the 120,000 public health effective workforce throughout the country, because these are the offices that our members lead. And you'll see up there the mission and the vision. These things are included on our website as well. And it's a pleasure to serve this part of the infrastructure. When we talk about the state health agency infrastructure, we're talking about a good variety, but we do survey our members to kind of capture what that means. And I would say, just roughly, to give you an understanding of some of the diversity that's out there, about 28% of our members, and that's including the District of Columbia, there is no local public health department. It's state only. And that includes the states with a large rural population. And so a strong centralized structure is needed to get into some of these rural populations, and therefore it's very strongly state-based. Another 37% local health services are provided by some local health departments. And the remainder, 35%, there is a kind of a combination or a hybrid of the above, of the centralized and decentralized systems. Our membership resides in offices that cover 12 different time zones. Across the world, and that does go all the way from Asia over way over in the east to the easternmost point of the United States in St. Croix in the Virgin Islands. Our work in primary care really runs the gamut. We do quite a few things to support the primary care infrastructure within the country. The safety net, also making sure we're clear that some states do provide services, and they are from the health state health agencies within those jurisdictions. We do provide some support for them, but because of budget shifts, there are some states that are backing out of service providing in their different areas. We also have a president. Currently, the president is Dr. Jose Montero from New Hampshire, and he has a challenge to his fellow members to integrate public health and health care. And so we're trying to support him and his challenge there. We're also working on building on a different map that was created from rooted in the report from the Institute of Medicine on the integration of public health and primary care, released at the end of March. There was a call to create a strategy to implement some of the recommendations from the map. We convened a meeting, and we have a strategic map. I'll put it up here in a second that shows about how to get to some of the recommendations that report gives us. Last, I want to talk about primary care office training and support. There are several different primary care office directors within the states and territories, and that's a unique part of the infrastructure in health systems, and I'll be speaking of that with that presentation here today. We have a manual that we maintain for new PCOs. We also have webinars that help those that are new to the position learn about those efforts, but also some more advanced webinars to take advantage of teaching some of the different legislative actions that have taken place to support workforce in the various states. Part of that support for the public health infrastructure is integration with the content areas, and we've spoken to some of the things that I do, but there are other parts of ASTO that actually speak to environmental health and infectious disease and other areas as well that look to support that primary care integration with those different content areas. Funding, we are funded by the Health Resources and Services Administration. We've been funded probably now for about 20 years from HRSA. That funding has taken different forms, and I will say that the most recent form shifts over from one bureau to the Office of Planning, Analysis, and Evaluation, with a cooperative agreement that also supports the National Association of County and City Health Officials, the National Conference of State Legislators, and the National Association of State Health Policy. I have acronyms for all of these. I try to stay away from those for those that don't know primary care so well. On the state level, this is that map that I was talking about, and this is a presentation, a poster session yesterday that spoke to the map and the tracks of work and what we're hoping to accomplish in the coming 2 years. sufficient to say that it is looking to really build on that IOM report on public health and primary care integration to see what specific steps can be made, not just by ASS, though, but by several organizations, including several primary care organizations, including several public health organizations, and including several different state offices and local departments of health. So, who are the primary care office directors? They are a part of the health resources and services administrative infrastructure that was set up in the 1980s to provide that support for primary care throughout the country. I think the most well-known part of that infrastructure are the community health centers, the Section 330 federally qualified health centers, and the PCOs are a part of that infrastructure. 1,200 health centers in the country and 8,000 underserved communities. Some of them have to rely on motorcycles alone for participation. Those that are there are going to be rebuilt because of the investment by the Affordable Care Act. $10 billion due to be injected into that system to provide support and new health centers throughout the country. Primary care office directors did start from a grant to support appropriate placement for National Health Service Corps clinicians. And was also originally set up to provide a certain coordination with primary care associations. In this world, you'll hear a lot about PCOs, PCAs, different acronyms. Again, I'm sorry that I did not spell those out here in the slide. I'll get to those as we move forward, and you too will be sufficiently proficient in the vernacular of the state primary care world. PCOs apply for and are funded currently by HRSAs, a cooperative agreement program, primary care services, resource coordination and development, and they work in cooperation with states. What that looks like, again, varies by state. The PCO cooperative agreement is administered via the Office of Shortage Designations, and this is located within the Bureau of Health Professionals within the Health Resources and Services Administration. With that cooperative agreement, there are four or five different core functions. These core functions are spelled out specifically, and just to give you a quick look, and it gets to that real coordination of different health services and different parts of the infrastructure. Importantly, what I want to point out to right now is that role of shortage designations. The health centers are established by the numbers that are taken in by the primary care office directors. And we'll get to that in a second. It's called shortage designations. There are specific terms that are created by HRSA, the reports that are submitted by the primary care office directors, which establish the numbers for medically underserved areas, medically underserved populations, and health professional shortage areas, MUAs, MUPs, and HPSAs. Again, the ACA investment in community health centers will be at $10 billion. And there is a new, to kind of highlight the importance of the designations process, it's called negotiated rulemaking. The law actually mandates a revisit of how those designations take place. This is a different presentation for a different time. The Secretary did call a committee to outline the necessary steps for designations, and that process is still taking place since the ACA. So, when I got to ASSO 3 years ago, I ran into a report from the year 2000 that was a survey of the primary care office directors, a helpful report that was initially done so that ASSO could learn how to best support this part of the infrastructure, a very little known part of the infrastructure. For me, I thought that we needed to do the survey again. We needed to figure out what this group needed. They don't have formal representation in a 501c3 as other parts of the state public health infrastructure do. So we are their representative organization. An example would be the Title V directors are supported by the Association of Maternal and Child Health Programs, AMCHIP, a formal 501c3 setup organization, which is an affiliate of ASTHOS. We don't tell them what to do, but we try to coordinate what we do with what they do in support of maternal and child health. The same with the PCOs. We try to make sure that we can pay attention to what they're saying and how we can support them best in their work, especially given that most of them report to our members. So, the 2010 survey equals the 2000 survey with some additional questions around funding, along with some questions about budget policies and some key contributions because of the real diversity in state health agencies, we did keep some of the questions qualitative, and we'll pull some of those out early on in our discussion right now. 81% response rate in 2000, 72% response rate in 2010. There are only 54 PCOs. Again, just to make sure we're clear, we have 59 members in ASTO, but 54 PCOs because a lot of the primary care offices within the Pacific Basin are all brought into one, which operates out of the state of Hawaii, the Pacific Basin PCO. Only 50% of the state and territorial PCOs reported in both surveys, so we want to be careful not to compare too much. We can draw some points out here, but we have to realize this is just one snapshot of PCOs in two set points in time. There's only so many things we can do with that, and there's a lot of other things that were coming around that influence the results of these things. So I'll be make sure to kind of give some caveats as we get to those areas. A lot of descriptive statistics, small sample size, not a lot of analysis needed here, but where we did use SPSS. So those qualitative parts, we had these key contributions, and we'll see that a lot of what they're doing really gets to an effective role for the PCOs in coordinating these systems. And importantly, they really coordinate with those core functions from that cooperative agreement set up by HRSA. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing. The one thing that doesn't come out here is shortage designations, because I think it's kind of a given that that's what the PCOs do. The PCOs are responsible for that very important part. So what we're going to talk about right now real quick are some of the funding discoveries we found, some organizational characteristics, some responsibilities, unmet needs, and then a quick slide or two on discussion, and then we'll shut down. So what we found regarding funding is a real diversity of funding, especially in 2010. We have different sources that come to the PCOs beyond the cooperative agreement now, including some different funding mechanisms which are fairly recent, the ERA funding. We have some pass-through funding that goes directly into clinician support in those loan repayment programs, and that's about 83% reported that funding for the health professional scholarship or loan repayment programs, and they administer those programs. They also administer the Conrad 30 and the J-1 visa programs, which are other legislative mechanisms, and there are other funding mechanisms that come through those different levels of support to build up the workforce. When we look at the different staffing levels for the PCO offices related to funding, I want to focus only on the cooperative agreement. From 2000 to 2010, it was relatively flat funding, not in line with the inflation, about 1.24% increase, and that meant that there was a real diminished funding related to the cooperative agreement. You had a lot of people that shifted downward and went from one to two, from the 2.5 that were there in 2000 because of that flat funding from the federal government, from that cooperative agreement. Additionally, state health agencies are the umbrella organization of the PCOs. Placement depends upon the state health agency. Two times more PCOs were in the same part of the organization as Title V, and more PCOs are actually co-located with those state offices of rural health in 2010 than 2000. Apologies for that blank slide. Additional staff beyond those covered in the HRSA cooperative agreement, there's a lot more people. Also, quite a range depending on state health agencies. You know, in California, the primary care office has a pretty impressive array of employees, but most of them are not supported by that HRSA cooperative agreement any longer. They're taking advantage of that diversified funding, ranging from 1 to 27 within primary care office directors, primary care offices. Apologies for that. Another important key characteristic is the stability in the office. And I think it's an important thing to pay attention to as we look at the changing systems and the expertise that's available and what can be leveraged effectively. I want to speak really quickly through this data to say that the big change is 64% in 2000 stayed at this position for more than 3 years. In 2010, it was over 74%. So there's real stability in this office throughout the country. It's important here also to pay attention to what happened in greater than 10 years. We have some people out there that have been around for a very long time, and they really know their community, really know their state and really know how to leverage the mechanisms to get effective care to those areas. The main responsibilities, of course, are designations. 1 to 2 staff persons only on designations, again, given that investment from HRSA and that flat funding. But that negotiated rulemaking process is changing, something we mentioned before. Also importantly, that coordination with external and internal agencies. Strong collaboration changes from 2000 to 2010, but it's very difficult to pinpoint why this is. I want to say by this data and what we're showing here, that interagency coordination is pretty strong. There is some drop there. You'll see a significant drop in minority health, particularly. Part of the reason for that is we also survey offices of minority health in the states, and we have more offices of minority health that are actually set up. The number continues to climb throughout the states, and minority health has been a real focus for the states. So there may be an explanation there. There's also different developments from SAMHSA on that coordination with mental health and primary care, and that may be the result for that increased collaboration with mental health over there to the right of the slide. I will say rural health and that focus has always been a strong focus, a very small drop from one point to another, but that collaboration to get services to remote areas cannot be understated. Unmet needs in 2010, very similar data needs, the chance to really use the data that's available and the different mechanisms that are set up to capture that data, health information. That's kind of what they speak to, and that's what they continue to speak to. There are great tools that are being set up by different parts, different partners, and there's a chance to actually leverage those to make their job a lot more effective, maybe a little bit easier, but also to see if they can kind of use that to kind of get to some other things that they're working on. An emphasis on designations trainings, something that's going to be up and coming. In 2010, when the survey was taken, an understanding that negotiated rulemaking would be changing was really close and present to the people that were responding, and they're aware of what they're going to need to know. Mapping tools, grants management, and the different HRSA programs that are set up to actually support their work. So, to summarize, what we learned from this data, some very important points. It reinforces the really critical role that primary care offices have within the health system's infrastructure within the states. A high level of expertise because of that stability that we mentioned earlier. That flat funding has prompted a certain creativity, working toward that diversity of funding, and because of that, there's a real pool of knowledge to be leveraged here. Increased focus on designations is probably due to the fact that there's a real importance with that increased role and that investment in the infrastructure from the federal government because of the Affordable Care Act. And last, alongside the different funding mechanisms that are happening from the federal government, states are cutting. And that means that they're impacted by furloughs, travel restrictions, and hiring freezes. What does that mean? That reliance on technology comes up again. And I know that from our perspective in providing that ongoing support, we're leveraging those things that can work for their offices, including distance learning, including different group email tools, web conferencing. We did mention those webinars, and that kind of reinforces, we're kind of building on this data to kind of reinforce those. That's when that 301 series came out, and the use of low-budget training tools, mentorships, and getting a real veteran PCO with someone who may be new to their role in office. And we do have a couple that have just jumped in, and it's been really helpful for them, someone in Iowa, to connect with someone from Nebraska who's been there for a long time and understands some of these rural communities and some of these tools that can be taken advantage of. And then in anticipation of further designations training, there's shortage designations. So, to summarize, a very critical part of the primary care infrastructure throughout our country. We're happy to report on this. We're happy to continue to support the primary care office directors. And I think the one good takeaway is the importance of this office and the role of supporting high-quality care, low-cost care, and population-level care throughout the country. So thank you very much.